Go with the flow once you're on site. And if you've prepared and you've communicated, then going with the flow will be easy.
Calgary Show Services presents the Event Planning Podcast, featuring interviews with industry professionals to help you produce your next event.
On today's podcast, I joined Kenna Burima, who speaks to us about empowering your event volunteers and staff by giving them specific responsibilities. She discusses managing multiple band events and her methods to promote her shows. You can check out Kenna this Friday at Lolita's and be sure to attend her CD release May 14th at the Ironwood.
Hello.
Kenna.
Hello. My name is Kenna Burima. I am a musician working in Calgary. I also teach, do radio, and I also like to put on events that bring together a variety of musicians and artists and community members for general good times and merriment.
What kind of events have you put on in the past?
So I, for a number of years, worked for the Calgary Folk Music Festival as their artistic associate, which meant that I was in charge of dealing with the needs of all the artists that would come to the festival. And that really well placed me for gaining knowledge and experience in how to take care of artists, particularly musicians. From the Folk Fest onwards, I've put together a Christmas concert every year that got Carol the Bells. And as well, I've done the End of the World Music Festival, which was back in 2012 on December 21st. I usually do a Valentine's Day event that brings together a bunch of female musicians, as well as a part of FemWave, which is Calgary's first and the really only feminist arts festival. And then, of course, my own shows and playing with a big band and a horn section means that trying to collect and schedule and organize six musicians can be an event in and of itself. So I keep myself busy with all of those different things.
For your own shows, when there's only like two to three bands on the bill, what is some of the things that you've tried to do to get people out and to promote the show?
It's a really good question, because I think that in the age of social media, it's very easy to rely on, just pestering your friends via Facebook or Twitter or what have you. But I find that a very passive way of trying to present an event to really the world in a convincing way in a way that convinces people that, yes, I'm going to go to that show. And really, ultimately, where I start from is that I start from a place of, how do I make this show special? How do I make this show something that people want to go to? It can't just be a regular gig, because there's regular gigs all the time. So how do I make my show special enough for people to pick it to go to? So the first thing that I always do is I make sure that I build a visual theme for the event. And how I go about doing that is, say, the last show that I played at the Ironwood, on December 3rd, I worked with a local artist by the name of Brianna Strong, who really has an amazing visual style and so I had her design a poster. And so the poster became sort of the calling card for the show. And because the poster itself not only had all the details of how people could come to the show, but also was really a striking representation of who I am as an artist, the music that I play. And so to me, the very first step of collaborating with a visual artist to come up with a really strong presentation of the event itself is the first step. I really think that's important. And I invest. I pay the artist to design. I pay a printer to print them. And sometimes I even pay someone to put up the posters.
Yeah.
Those are the two things that I definitely start with. And then the second thing is just putting in the time of literally putting together personal emails and talking with people through email to say, hey, I'm putting on the show. I'd really like it if you can come. I mean, sometimes you don't have the time and you do just a mass email, but I'm finding that funny enough, email has become sort of old fashioned in the way that you're making a personal connection rather than just sort of blasting out into the into the social media universe. So I find that those personal emails really make a big difference. And then what I also do is I become that annoying person. Whenever I see someone or hang out with someone and it's before my show, a week before my show, 2 weeks before my show, I'm telling people about it and I'm saying, oh, I'd love it if you came to my show. And I try and do it in a way, you know, that isn't, you know, used car salesperson kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, like I try to do it, in such a way that, you know, that people feel like that I truly want to have them there because, you know, yes, absolutely. Generally speaking, I want to fill the house. Absolutely. But the other thing is that I want to have people there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I want to have people there that I love and that love me, or, you know, that at least that I want to have an audience that is invested. So go ahead.
How do you go about picking the venue?
Good question. So the venue that I currently really like playing is the Ironwood. And the Ironwood, I got to say, is sometimes not exactly the easiest venue to book at, just because I'm not the only person that loves playing the Ironwood. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of artists that want to play. And even though it's a venue that has, you know, live music 365 days of the year, pretty much, it's a coveted venue. And the reason that it is because of the culture that they've created there. They charge at least a $15 cover charge.
Mm-hmm.
They start shows at 8 o'clock on weeknights, 9 o'clock on weekend nights, which for this old gal, in her 30s, is now actually something that I really like.
Yeah.
Certainly other venues in Calgary, and I play in a couple bands where we're more sort of the bar type situation. You know, most of the time I'm stepping on stage earliest midnight kind of thing. And that's fine if it's a rock show or a punk show, but the kind of music that I do in my solo act and the type of audience that I want to draw, I want them to sit, have a couple drinks, And truthfully, to sit and listen. But the shows that I book now, at the venues that I book, I have that in mind, that what kind of experience do I want my audience to have? And I try to cater to that. And the Ironwood, I find, it, at least for Calgary venues, is a venue that really respects their artists, tries to create a culture of a listening room where when the musician is on stage and playing, that the house is somewhat quiet,
right.
You know, and to me, I really, those are the types of performing venues that I dig. I mean, the other thing is, and what I've, you know, been always trying to do is look for alternative venues. That means you have to put a lot more work, and generally they cost a lot more because you have to, you know, bring in your own PA, bring in your own sound person, sometimes even set up your own bar. But doing shows in unique spaces that aren't typical venues can a lot of times, you know, be the draw of itself, in and of itself.
So when you set up a show like that, are you relying on pre-sales to cover the costs of those upfront, like venue deposits and whatnot, or are you just putting it out there and hoping that you're selling tickets at the door?
Yeah. So I like the former, like in terms of going into unique spaces and creating my own show?
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess it depends. I mean, certainly if you're working in a unique space, you know, I'd like to think that, you know, upfront rentals aren't that expensive.
Mm-hmm.
But really what it comes down to is for me, I want to try and keep costs low, but make sure that that I can still cover costs even if no one comes.
Right.
And so I guess it's a mindset. For me, I go into knowing full well exactly what my hard costs are. And generally, I find when you're putting on shows like that, your hard costs are PA, sound person, and paying the bands. And so if you can cover sound person, PA, paying your musicians, and you start there, that's sort of my basic investment. And one of the other things that, you know, I get asked a lot, it's like, well, what do you consider important, or what do you consider successful in your career? And to me, I want to work with the best musicians I possibly can. And the truth is, and you know this, and I think anyone who's worked with great musicians knows that great musicians don't play for free. And I mean, maybe they do sometimes, but certainly working musicians need to be paid. And so to me, I treat every show as an investment, and I'm not ever looking at that show as just that's the last show. I look at that show as I'm investing in my band so that they'll want to continue to play with me so that they'll play the next show.
For sure. And what about volunteers at these events? How are you, are you utilizing volunteers, and what are they getting out of it?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I volunteer in lots of other different capacities, when it comes to putting on shows, it's so funny how I still am always amazed and delighted that people are willing to volunteer and give their time to any event that I organize. So something like FemWave was a really unique event because it was an event that spoke to a very large demographic, but also a very specific demographic. It was a feminist festival, which meant that young women who considered themselves feminists, or even young men, we had a lot of guys volunteering as well, if they considered themselves feminists, they wanted to get involved with the festival just because they were excited that there was going to be a festival that spoke to them and the things that they find important.
Right.
And so there's this really, it's fascinating and it's wonderful that people are willing to give of their time to something that they believe in. And it could be just that. It could be just that I want to be a part of this event. And if it means that either I'm donating my time so I can be there or I'm buying a ticket to be there, I think that people kind of make that decision. Some people are volunteer sort of oriented, and those are the people, of course, that I kind of am aware of. I think, you know, I have a large circle of friends who also love to put on events and be a part of crazy ideas that I come up with. So that means that we have a great pool of people who, you know, will say, yes, yeah, okay, I'll work the door, or yes, I'll work the bar, or yes, I'll go pick up whatever it needs to be picked up and bring it to the venue. And you know, for me, what I try and do is make sure that every single person that is volunteering their time, A, feels like they're a part of something that's important, B, that they actually feel important because they're a part of it, and C, that they're properly compensated in either good times or general love or, you know, or tickets to the next show. I think having that kind of acknowledgement and acknowledging that people are giving up their time as volunteers for an event is really important. And I guess that's a big thing. Like for me, I try to make my shows more about something more than just me. And so I think maybe that's where people feel comfortable to, you know, give of their time, that they're not just giving it to me, but they're giving it to an event that means something.
So do you think that tying your event in with a fundraising goal contributes to its success?
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, I think, you know, it's I try to be careful about putting on fundraisers and making sure that I'm not taking it for granted or taking advantage of musicians, because I think fundraisers, if there is music involved, musicians seem to be, or artists really of any discipline, seem to be the last people to get paid.
Yeah.
Always. You know, I guess you would ask for, maybe if you're going to work with a caterer or, you know, yourself, your company as well, if you're going to work with a sound company maybe there are discounts involved or not. But there is always an expectation that you will pay your caterer, you will pay your sound person, you will pay the venue for rental. Mm-hmm. And so I try to do the same thing for Carol the Bells. Lots of people do donate their time and energy. But generally, I find that if you are going to do a fundraiser, first and foremost, you do the fundraiser because you believe in whatever it is that you're raising money for.
Right.
And that is your first and foremost reason for doing it. Go ahead.
Have you ever had an event sponsor or have like someone from corporate community representing themselves to try to cut some of the costs of the event? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. And generally we work with smaller businesses. I mean, I think the largest business we've worked with in the past was Mill Street Organic, which was a great company to work with. We got them as a sponsor for the End of the World Music Festival, and that was through working with Slat Island. We've also had smaller beer companies like Village or Big Rock sponsor our event, but mostly it's been smaller businesses, and I think that's also just generally you know, where my interest lies and where my interest lies in collaborating with those companies. Mm-hmm. You know, and also that kind of relationship can be much more dynamic. I think that if you are wanting to work with a big corporate sponsor, that's kind of a relationship that you have to develop over a period of time that a lot of times I just don't have. You know, so for example, I can approach a local brewery and say, "Hey, I got a show coming up in a month. Think we could work something out?" And generally speaking, they always can. If I was to contact a really large beer company or a big corporation, having an event in a month, I think, you know, it'd be hard pressed to be able to nail anything down. And it's just, you know, the nature, I think, of bureaucracies and corporate organizations that things sometimes move a little bit slower than if you just go to a small, you know, mom pop kind of operation.
So speaking of the liquor producers, how do you navigate licensing and insurance and whatnot?
Certainly. So it all depends on what type of event you're wanting to put on. If you're going to be selling tickets and you're going to be serving booze and it's going to be at a venue that doesn't generally do that, you do have to get a license. And that means that you usually what you have to do is do a lot of paperwork and shell out some money for the license. I think it's usually around the tune to $750. And why? And that's a license that takes a long time, just because they need to have sign off, not just on the Alberta liquor, but also the police have to sign off on it. Fire and safety have to sign off on it, and someone else has to sign off on it. Luckily, and here's another thing that I highly recommend for anyone putting on shows or larger scale events, or even mid-size events, is that don't do everything yourself. The way that I've been able to do all the different things that I do is because I have this team of friends who I've been working with for almost a decade, putting on shows. And these are just like-minded girlfriends who have amazing skills that are different from my own. So for example, I work with a gal by the name of Johanna Schwartz, who is a website designer, graphic designer, and is fantastic with admin and licensing. So she does anything that has to do with that kind of stuff, she does. I don't even have to worry about it because I know it's going to be done. Same goes for working with a media and marketing person. I have a wonderful friend named Tara Sukit, who was the media relations gal for the Calgary Folk Fest for 20 odd years. And having her and her relationships that she's built with media means that that's something that I don't necessarily have to worry about. And so, you know, those types of details are so important, because if they get missed, like the license that you referred to, you can very easily get shut down. And so I've really found that over the years, putting on, you know, bigger and bigger events is actually not as painful as I thought they might be, because I have such a great group of people to work with.
What would you say is one of the best events that you've been to? Not necessarily one that you planned, but you know, just something that you attended, and what made it so memorable to you?
I know this might be a cop out, but I think that every time I go to the Calgary Folk Music Festival, I'm just really struck with how amazing that festival is. And I know it's not necessarily unique in that regard. Folk festivals across Canada have really done this unique thing where they've been able to build a really strong community, ultimately an army of volunteers who believe so strongly in their folk festival that, you know, they'll marry co-volunteers and their kids will volunteer and full families will develop out of the world of the folk festival. And to me, I think that speaks really strongly to the health of an event, that if people put their soul and their heart and their love into something, you can't help but feel it. So I definitely feel that when I go to the festival. Even though I was a part of Femwave and am the director, one of the nights that I was not a part of at all was the Saturday Night Funhouse at the Palomino, and it was an amazing event because I'm always like, if you're going to put on an event with multiple stages and you're going to endeavor to do such a night, where you're going to have, you know, multiple acts and multiple stages and lots going on, proper communication with bands so that every single person in that band knows when they step onto site or they step onto the venue, they know exactly where they're going, they know exactly what they're doing, when they're playing, what's expected of them. That kind of thing, I think, is, you can just see in a really well-run show. And, you know, I'm sure it's the same with yourself. It's like when you've done so many shows and you try and go to a show that you are not a part of, it's hard to just sit there and be an audience member, because you just, you can't help but sort of see the strings behind behind the curtain, so to speak, I guess. And
what do you think would be a big learning curve for somebody that's planning an event that has like multiple bands, or where, you know, you might have to have a pretty detailed itinerary? What's the most challenging thing, do you think, to keep the event running smoothly?
On the ground, like when you're actually at your event and things are happening, being able to have a couple of point people that you can say, okay, if something goes wrong with tech, that person deals with it. And they have the power and the ability to deal with stuff going down without me being involved. Same thing with if anything goes on backstage or if anything happens ticketing. I think what's really important to the success of an event is that you don't just have one person. And you see this happening all the time with events, is that you have one person who is just run completely ragged.
Yeah, and six people waiting to talk to them.
Exactly. And it's hard to do. I get it. It is so hard to say, okay, I'm not going to have any power or any control over this part. This is I'm going to give this to someone, and I'm not going to micromanage. I may check in with them, but I am going to empower them to own it, make decisions without me being involved, and that is theirs. It's hard to let go of that, especially if you're, you know, an A-type personality like me, or, you know, really want to have control over what you're doing and feel strongly about it. That's cool, but it's just... You just see it happen, and you see, you know, when those six people are waiting to talk to you, they end up just dealing with it themselves anyway a lot of times. So, again, being able to have a team helping you organize and plan from the get-go, and then having them on the ground working, you know, in their own sort of wheelhouses, you know, I have found that you just whatever you come across, whatever fire happens, you can put it out easily. You can juggle as many balls as you want in the air because you have multiple hands juggling. And you know, yeah, I guess there is a part of me that I'm lucky that I've been surrounded myself with such talented people. But I think that anyone can do that, regardless of whatever it is their thing that they're doing. If they can find like-minded people and create a team and make it a thing that people want to do and are excited to do, I think anyone can put on any kind of show that they want.
Mm-hmm. What about dealing with your audiovisual and lighting guys? Do you have any suggestions?
I will really work hard, and to varying levels of success, I will work my hardest to make sure that the sound person has as much information about the show ahead of time, what the schedule is, what the bands are like, stage and tech plots to them ahead of time. But then even
I love you, Kenna.
Okay, but you heard me. I try, because I think sometimes it really is easy to forget about those things, about that pre-communication. But honestly, I have never met a sound person that hasn't been like, "Oh my God, thank you for this ahead of time." I treat the sound tech as a bandmate, as you know, if I have a 6-person band, which I do, the sound guy is the 7th band member. Go with the flow once you're on site. And if you've prepared and you've communicated and you've, you know, advanced everything in terms of logistics, then going with the flow will be easy because everyone will be going in the same flow, I guess. You know, and for me, that's really what it really comes down to. I think that, you know, being able to plan in advance. And I know for me, shows sneak up on me. And, you know,
funny,
especially
even
when you're
if
busy.
You give yourself months and months.
Yeah,
they always are just around the corner.
It all of a sudden it's just around the corner. Absolutely. I was speaking with a friend and musician who I deeply respect, and I know you're familiar with her work, but for your listeners, Foon Yap is her and I used to play together in a band called Wood Pigeon. We collaborate quite regularly. She's a vocalist and violinist. She's releasing an album next year. Her and I started talking about her album release 2 years ago. And she said, and I said, oh, when are you releasing your album? Because she just finished recording it. And she's like, oh, in 2 years. And I'm like, what? And she says, hey, that's how long it takes me to organize, you know, to plan all these things.
Yeah.
You know, and it kind of blew my mind because I'm like, that's not the time frame that I work with.
Right.
But for her, she's plotted out exactly every month what is she, make sure her website's up to date. She's sending out to record labels. She's making sure she has a venue. Like, 2 years is actually, in a way, like, if you can plan that much in advance, how fantastic is that? Because if you keep on revisiting and continue to work on your show, by the time you come to it, there's, you know, no stone left unturned. Yeah.
The musician was Foon Yap.
Foon Yap.
Just a little unclear. I was wondering if you're stuck on a desert island and you only could have one meal for the rest of your life, day after day. And I think I've asked you this before. What would it be?
I think I answered pizza, and I will stick with that. I had no idea
pizza?
How much I love pizza. Yeah, pizza.
Still.
I love pizza. Yeah. and if I could just give a shout out to La Dolce Vita Pizza Bar, LVD Pizza Bar in Bridgeland. They're on First Ave Northeast. They make the best pizza. It's so good. And I wish they would be listening because maybe they could sponsor me, like just sponsor my life. Generally.
Yeah, they could.
Because I love their pizza. I mean, I'll even go with a thin crust Panago in a pinch. And actually, my partner and I, Steve, we just ordered that 2 nights ago. So pizza is a regular occurrence in our house. Yeah. But second would be burgers, which is like now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like.
Sorry, you don't get a second chance.
No. But that is an indication of me being a 12. I must be like a 12-year-old kid. Like, pizza and burgers, I'm fine.
So where can people find out about you and your music?
Yes. So I have a website, kennabarima.com. I will say that I'm planning my album release for the end of April.
Oh, great.
At the Ironwood. And, you know, but the best place to find me, definitely social media is a good place to find me. I'm pretty active. So Facebook, which I know is kind of passe for some generationals, but Facebook and Twitter. And Instagram, and I'm just Kenna Burma at both of them. Kenna Burma on Facebook, Kenna Burma on Twitter, and Kenna Burma on Instagram, which is K-E-N-N-A Burima, B-U-R-I-M-A.
Great. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me.
Hey, no, my pleasure.
Cool.
Come on, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks. Bye.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening. This podcast was produced by Duncan Kenworthy, Eric Jesse, and Chris Benoit. Visit us online at calgaryshowservices.com to join our monthly newsletter for inventory updates and event insights.